The following program is sponsored by the Jelinski Advisory Group, which is solely responsible for its content. Josh Jelinski is the president of Wealth Quarterback LLC, a registered investment advisory firm located in New Jersey. Registration is not an endorsement of the firm or its representatives by securities regulators, nor is it an indication that the advisor has attained a particular level of skill or ability. Investment advisory services may only be provided to clients in jurisdictions in which the firm and its representatives are appropriately registered or exempt from registration. You should not assume that any discussion or information contained in this broadcast serves as the receipt of or as a substitute for personalized investment advice from the advisor. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk, and there can be no assurance that the future performance of any specific investment, investment strategy, or product, or any non-investment-related content made reference to directly or indirectly in this broadcast will be profitable, equal any corresponding indicated historical performance level or levels, be suitable for your portfolio or individual situation, or prove successful. Past performance is not indicative of future result. Investment advisory services offer through Wealth Quarterback LLC.
Tired of losing money in the stock market roller coaster? Frustrated with the government taxing you into oblivion? Worried about inflation? How do you prepare for so many financial uncertainties? Welcome to the show that will help you develop your game plan. The Financial Quarterback with Josh Jelinski. Josh is a noted financial advisor and president of the Jelinski Advisory Group, and he's here to answer your questions. Call into the show at 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Now, let's kick off your financial future. Here's Josh Jelinski.
So, Dr. Richard Smith, for our listeners who are not familiar with your work, give us a 30-second bio, and then we will go to talk about the Silicon Valley Bank failures. Is it the next Lehman? Then we'll go on to some other fun stuff. So,
all
go
right,
ahead,
sounds
Dr.
good.
Smith, for those who are not familiar with your work.
Sure. Well, I've been working in the financial industry for 25 years now. And I developed a service called TradeStops.com. I exited and sold that a few years ago. Today, I'm the chairman of the Foundation for the Study of Cycles. You can find us at cycles.org. And then I also have my own website at drrichardsmith.com.
So everybody's abuzz about the Silicon Valley Bank failures. In one sense, I don't really care about it. To me, it's just a bunch of Silicon Valley rich people can't get their money, boo-hoo. But then part of me is worried because I made some links. So the initial thing is the banking industry after the Wall Street collapse of 08 really is stronger than ever. The big banks, the Wells Fargos, the Bank of Americas, the AIGs, they paid back the government and they all bolstered their reserves. You had the Basel requirements, and maybe you could speak to that. But then I started to worry. I thought about all these unicorn startups. I pulled a list together of the most valuable startups in the world, the unicorns, the companies over $1 billion. And they have a cumulative valuation of, get this, $3.858 trillion. And that's what gets me worried, because is this the canary in the coal mine? In one sense, I'm not that worried because the traditional banking system is solid. But this whole fintech banking thing where they used the FDIC charter, this could be very bad. So what say you?
Well, so far, I think that it's a isolated incident. I mean, I think it is a bit of a canary in the coal mine, but it's Silicon Valley Bank. They're a very unique bank. They got tons of deposits in the as technology has boomed, right? Even into the COVID crisis when technology boomed. And meanwhile, back then, they couldn't earn any interest anywhere, right? So they got these deposits, they got to put them to work, and they go and buy treasuries and things like that. And they have those, they're holding them on their books in a way that they can't sell them. And so then you have soaring interest rates that are creating problems for them, because that means those securities and bonds and treasuries that they had are marked down, and they had a liquidity crisis. So I do think it's a fairly unique situation, that Silicon Valley Bank is a very unique bank. But I don't think they're the only ones who are under pressure because of rising rates across the economy, but with the Federal Reserve and inflation in particular.
So, Dr. Smith, you are the CEO for the Foundation of the Study in Cycles, and we're on YouTube, we're on Clubhouse, we're being joined. We had a special guest, Cindy Stumpo, who's famous builder in the country, who's a famous cycles analyst. But Cindy and I, this was, I don't know, a year and a half ago, we were talking about how kind of the cycles, and she uses the cycles in real estate. I know you use the cycles as a market analyst. Like it was pretty easy to see that in December of 2021, we were sort of at a top of a cycle. Maybe not the exact top. Things were a little too rich. People were getting, you know, rich on NFTs and rich in crypto and rich on this. It seemed like very late 1999 to me and to her. So we were here talking, Cindy and I were talking in January of 2022, December of 2021. We were like one of two people in a room of, I don't know, 1,000 people. We're the only people
talking. Everybody bullish.
Everybody else was bullish. Except Cindy and I, and people made us look, you know, John Ledger, head of T-Mobile, was in the room. Grant Cardone was in the room of, you know, Instagram fame and stuff. And we were just saying things are too high. Things are going to go down. Yeah. And they were talking about how interest rates would stay low forever. So Cindy is a cycles analyst, but like just through observing the real estate market, like every so many 7 to 10 years. And I was a study of cycles guy just because I'm friends with Stan Harley, who I know is a good friend of yours. And I've just seen it, you know, every 7 to 10 years or some type of calamity.
Yeah, well, I mean, the most well-known cycle in the markets is a 41, 42-month cycle in the stock market. It's been there consistently for well over 100 years. And using our cycles technology, had forecasted the top to be about November 21. So we were a little early, but we pretty much called that top in late November. And it's been down ever since. And we don't really have it coming to a conclusion and a bottom until the end, like the fall of 2023.
So we got another 10 months of pain. Now, How bad do you think it'll get? I mean, I know cycles analysts never say that, but...
Well, cycles don't really tell you magnitude. They help you with turning points. I personally think it can get fairly bad. I think that that's not just because of the cycles. It's because of the Federal Reserve and the lack of liquidity, increasing interest rates. You know, there's cycles and there are cycles. And the biggest cycle, Josh, that we're dealing with is the 40-year cycle in interest rates. So interest rates have been going down for pretty much 40 years now, but we definitely have hit the bottom in that cycle and we're on the way back up. And the majority of investors today have no idea what it means to invest in a rising interest rate environment. And so that's the real headwinds, that and the debt in the United States and the debt monetization that's going on by essentially, you know, monetizing our debt by having more inflation. So when you print money, you get inflation, and that's what we're dealing with, and that's going to be with us for a long time. So I don't really see things changing. I wouldn't be surprised, Josh, if we don't see new highs until the next decade.
Wow. So this would be a lost decade, like 2000 to 2010.
I think it could easily be a lost decade. Absolutely.
Wow. So you came
You felt it back then. If you've been around the markets for any length of time, you're talking about what we all felt in 2021, at least those of us who have been around for a couple of decades, right? Yeah. That was a crazy time. And then the Super Bowl commercials came out with Tom Brady and Matt Damon, you know, and LeBron James pumping crypto NFTs. I mean,
Yeah, it was pretty.
You didn't have to be Einstein to figure that out, you know, that was closer to the top than the bottom.
People wanted to believe that, I guess, there was more, you know, juice in the squeeze. So you came out with a new book called The Risk Manifesto. We'll talk about that and how this may be an antidote for troubled times. So inflation has been top of mind for quite some time now. What are your thoughts on the current situation and where do you think we're headed?
I think that inflation is here to stay. I don't think the Federal Reserve is going to get the genie back into the bottle down to 2% without absolutely destroying the economy. So I think inflation, you have to have it pretty much when you have as much debt as we do, right? Because the inflation helps make the debt be cheaper to pay off. So that's called debt monetization. I think, you know, Ray Dalio put out a book last year called Principles for Dealing with the Changing World Order. And he talked about this in depth, Josh, and I'd highly recommend his book if you haven't had a chance to read it. He also has a website at economicprinciples.org. That's a great place where you can see his charts, etc. But the United States is in the late stages of an 80-year cycle going back to, you know, World War II and the time after World War II. And we had an incredible rise after World War II. We peaked in probably the 80s, and we've been the beneficiary of declining interest rates for the last 40 years. But we are in the late stages of a debt cycle, and there's just no way around that. So you have kind of the financialization and the monetization of everything, but you really have kind of the gutting of the innards of the economy. And you also have a lot of conflict in the United States. There's a lot of disagreement about what we should be doing and who should be getting what. And I think those are going to be here with us, you know, for a few more years at least.
So do you think the Fed will help or hurt this situation? Do you think they're going to send us into a recession by raising rates too aggressively? I know cycles guys really don't think the Fed has any power, right?
I mean, I don't think the Fed is powerless. I think they have a lot of power, but I think the economy is something that nobody can control. And so they're doing their best, but they're working, you know, they're trying to drive the economy by looking in the rearview mirror. And they're going to overshoot. They're going to correct. And there's going to be feedback. And that's going to create a lot of uncertainty, a lot of confusion. I expect more volatility in the months and years ahead. And it's just a tough, tough job. The expectations that people have put on the Fed is really where the problem is, more than the Fed itself. Everybody is hanging on every word of the Fed, you know, and you get that in part, Josh, because we're living in this kind of fiat economy. So because everything has been so monetized, because so much money has been printed, because interest rates have been manipulated for so long, we're not living in the real world when it comes to our financial economy. It's a lot of, it's fiat, right? We live in a fiat economy, and that's can only go on for so long. And I think it's something that we got to work through.
So Russ has this question. I don't know, Russ, if you want to voice your question, go ahead on inflation.
Oh, sure, Dr. This is a fascinating discussion. I just was curious. You were saying the Fed, you know, raising interest rates, inflation, make the national debt cheaper. And I was like, that should make debt service more expensive. Maybe you could elaborate on that.
Sure. I mean, it does raise the nominal dollar amount that you have to pay in interest payments. But when dollars are being printed and you can print them, right, then you can pay off that debt with cheaper dollars. So that cuts both ways. It's inflation for the rest of us by having all that money printing. But for the actual holders of, you know, the people that have to pay that debt, the government and the Federal Reserve, that debt is easier to pay off when you can print more dollars.
Got it.
No, that's great. So we'll talk about more of these things when we return with Dr. Richard Smith. 888-988-JOSH. We'll be back after these messages.
Tune in to the financial quarterback Josh Chelinski this weekend and learn how to protect your financial future in a down economy. Josh and his team at the Chelinski Advisory Group can help you lower your taxes and lower your risk in these uncertain times with a 27-point checklist designed to improve your financial health. Whether you're worried about runaway prices, fear of an upcoming recession, or a stock market meltdown, tune in to the financial quarterback and count on Josh Chelinski to call the play. For a free copy of Josh's book, The Retirement Reality Check, call 888-988-5674. That's 888-988-5674. Or visit Chelinski.org. That's Chelinski.org.
I mean, you just said, hey, we could go through a 10-year, you know, nothing, making nothing in the market.
Sure. Well, I mean, the nice thing is that you do have some options with your cash now, right? Yeah. I just, you know, locked in some 5%, you know, 1-year CDs. And that's something that I can't remember when the last time I was able to do that was. So I do think that in some senses, if you are a saver, you have some more options now, which you haven't had for a while. But I think the most important thing that people have to figure out, Josh, is what is their time horizon? And if you're in it for the next 20 years, you know, you just keep doing the same thing. You can dollar cost average. You can diversify. If you only got 5 years, 10 years, you know, then you have to protect what you've got. So I went through this with my mom recently and I got her out of the markets because, you know, she needs that money to live on and it can't be at risk. And I think that there is significant risk. So we got her into some bond ladders and some CDs and taking the cycles into consideration. I think short-term interest, I think interest rates are going to continue to go up. So I'm pretty comfortable, you know, dealing in 1 or 2 year durations and then looking for higher interest rates in the future.
Yeah, well, I want to get your view on what the cycles will tell us about real estate, stocks, and interest rate bond cycles. But first, Cindy, I know you were trying to speak. You want to go ahead?
Yeah. If you're not feeling safe in banks right now because people are panicking, you should see Massachusetts right now, right? We have 6 locations. So with that being said, just put your money in United States Treasuries. Right now, you're getting 4.90. Lock it in for 90 days at a time, whatever you feel comfortable doing. I'm in a little bit of a panic. I've got money in there. And I only have money in there because I was with Boston Private Bank and then they were bought out. And I'm like, then my girl in the office calls me today. She's like, you better get in here right now. I'm like, oh God, no, don't tell me I'm in there. Please don't tell me I'm in there. Didn't even realize I had money in there.
In Silicon Valley Bank?
Yeah, because I started with Boston Private.
Ah, yeah.
And they were bought out. Right? Go. So I wasn't even paying attention. So there you go.
Well, thanks for your honesty, because so many people don't share those horror stories. And that's why you always want to...
You have to see these banks right now in Massachusetts. They are outside. The police are out there. It's insanity.
Really?
But you know, the CEO, you know, he... Look it. And here's the crazy part. They just borrowed $2.2 billion yesterday. And everybody's at zero. Like, you're at zero. You know, and listen, banks are going to tell you that they're insured, right? Like me, like, you know, they tell me, okay, I've got DIF, FDIC, but again, that's only as good as who's insuring them. Do you understand that? Like, that we're only as secure as who the insurance is.
Yeah, that's why you got to stick to the limits, too.
Yeah,
because
what
they could say, hey,
let me ask you a question. What am I going to do? Run to 1,000 banks and put 250, 250, 250, 250, 250?
Yeah, no, we have a program, by the way. No, we have a program for clients where Fidelity and Schwab will actually band. So you can get, if you have $1 million cash, they'll put 250 with one, 250 with another, 250 with another, two, but you get one statement. So it's easy.
That's $1 million. Okay. That's easy to do if you have $1 million.
No, I mean, I have clients with 10 million, 20 million, 30 million, and that's what they do. And they spread it out. And it's like your grandmother. So they literally have 30 different banks backing their money. And that way they can stay within the FDIC limits. Definitely. You can do that. It's easier. I'll help you.
Bottom line, the CEO went crazy. You know what I mean? Listen, I don't think that we're definitely not going into a banking crisis, okay? The banks are too strong. But again, it's making everybody with any wealth in the banks panic a bit.
Yeah, I think you got to mind the FDIC limits, and many good advisors, wealth managers will have programs where you can actually have different banks, but one statement. So it's easy. But
I do think Cindy's right that this has kicked off some anxiety that the market's going to have to work through. You know, we can sit here and say, yeah, it's Silicon Valley Bank is unique and it's not the same as all the others.
Yeah, but look at First Republic.
This was the second biggest bank failure in the history of the United States, right? So this is not a, you know, this is not a fly on, you know, that you have to like take off your shoulder, right? People are going to have to come to terms with this. And I think it's going to take a little while.
Well, okay. But look at First Republic today, too.
Seems yeah, like absolutely. And Signature Bank of New York, right?
So
they were down 25%.
And they halted trading on First Republic today. So
I was down to 45 and then it recovered to like 86 by the end of the day, what I saw.
I can tell you this a lot.
Yeah, First Republic is interesting because they have a lot of, they must be in the Northeast, Connecticut-ish. And I think they have a lot of kind of concentrated wealth from rich people who have had big exits from the financial system. So in some senses, they're kind of reminiscent of Silicon Valley Bank.
There's a lot of Boston guys in Silicon Bank right now. Mm-hmm. I got Jeff Lyric. I mean, he was bought out for like $280 million and then stayed on as CEO of Leering Research. You know, I don't know. I don't know how far that takes him down, but these are people that I know direct on. I got four clients, you know, that are heavy in silicone. And if they were borrowing from silicone, they had to have major deposits in there. So
Cindy, do I understand you're in real estate?
Yeah, Annie. Yeah.
What, in commercial real estate?
Commercial and residential.
And what are you seeing, boots on the ground?
And my boots are always on the ground, trust me. well, listen, if you go back and you can find the interview on Bloomberg 2017, I called the fourth quarter 2019 was going to be our slowdown, right? And it was. You know, high-end residential, middle-end residential was sitting on the market, right? Things were slowing. They were slowing down. Fourth quarter 2019, they just... houses weren't selling as fast, right? 8 months, 6 months, prices were dropping. So I was right on target with that. But 2020 came, COVID hit us, and I always say the same thing. Everybody said, okay, we're dying. We're going to die. We're going to end up on ventilators. Let's everybody go out and buy houses. Like I never saw anything like this in 36 years. I never witnessed anything like this in 36 years, right? I'm going, what are people thinking here?
Yeah.
And if COVID did not hit up, our run in real estate would have been that 8-year cycle, and we would have come to a slowdown. And again, I can give you the cycles from when I started in 1989. You remember, Black Monday was 87. Then the real estate market went to the toilet, 89, you know, around the end of 88, 89, 90, 91, 92, 93, bad years. Started to pull out of it, and then we got hit with what I call a hiccup in 99. And then we went right to 2008, do the numbers, do the calculation of the numbers. There was the run, 2008, boom, went down again. 9, 10, 11, started to pick up in 12. And then now you've had the longest run that I can ever see in the real estate market, and we're in 2023. Now again,
so Massachusetts, have you ever heard of Phil Anderson?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He does cycles in real estate, and he's got an 18.6-year real estate cycle that he's identified.
Yep. And I align exactly with his philosophy, right in line.
Yeah. So we interviewed him on our YouTube channel on the Foundation for the Study of Cycles about a month or two ago, and it was a great interview. And he's been calling. I mean, that's the amazing thing. He's been forecasting a top in real estate in right in this neighborhood of, you know, 2022, 2023 for about 10 years. So,
yeah, but I think
that's amazing.
He would have been wrong. I think he would have been wrong if COVID didn't hit up.
Well, you know, Edward Dewey's book was called Cycles, the Mysterious Forces That Trigger Events. You know, maybe COVID was in the cycles.
Maybe, but at the end of the day, you follow cycles and you know the cycles. You watch the pattern. If you've been doing it long enough, the writing's on the wall, just nobody sees it. Right? Yep. You just feel it. You know it. You feel it in your bones. You know it's coming.
Yeah.
But again, the newbie guys out here the last 10 years, 7 years, 6 years, 5 years in the real estate market, you know, I always say these kids think it's drug money, right? Like this is going to last forever.
I mean, it kind of is.
But it doesn't. It doesn't last forever. So, you know, a lot of people...
It's drug money from the Federal Reserve.
Exactly. But, you know, look, if you haven't been out here long enough, I always say, if you haven't tasted your own blood at least one time, then you're never going to learn.
That's a good lesson. Thank you,
that's
Cindy.
A good one.
We got a question for Dr. Smith from Russ. Russ, go ahead. You have a good counter to the negative.
Yeah, well, I was just... you know, we're 15 months into a bear market. The markets are down 20% on average. You know, it's 33% on the NASDAQ and maybe 10% or 11% on the Dow. But if you take the, I guess the counter argument to all this bearishness would be, we've already experienced a lot of pain. And I'm generally bearish. Just my personal view is that he's probably right for the rest of this year, certainly. But, you know, the counter argument is we've taken a lot of pain and don't we have to factor that in? Or you're like, nope, we're just going to be bearish for the next 10 years.
You know, there's a lot of bullishness from traditional cycles also this year. We're in the third year of the presidential cycle, right? And so the third year of a presidential term has very consistently been a very bullish year. The thesis is that the existing president is trying to make sure things look encouraging for his reelection. So, you know, there are some cycles that you'd expect a lot of bullishness, especially after we've already experienced as much pain as we have. And, so I do think it's a tough market to call right now. And there's just no way around that. So I think it's going to lead to more volatility and uncertainty. You know, I mean, before the last couple of days with this breakdown that we had, there was a lot of reason for optimism. We were holding above the 200-day moving average. There was a head and shoulders, you know, formation that was working. But things really broke down in the last couple of days. And you know, it may bounce back, but I just think in the end, we have to place our bets. I'm not out of the markets altogether, but I'm definitely getting more conservative. And I want to make sure I avoid my worst case scenario, which is that, you know, my lifestyle is significantly impacted. And that's called minimax regret, right?
Yeah, I think that's very pragmatic, and I agree with that 100%. That makes sense.
Yeah.
No,
so
great.
I'm leaning bearish, but if the market takes off, you know, I'm going to be okay with that.
So we'll talk about more of these things when we return with Dr. Richard Smith. And get his book. You can go to drrichardsmith.com. Get his book on Risk, called The Risk Manifesto, drrichardsmith.com. That's drrichardsmith.com. Very easy. And you can get the book, reserve your copy, or call us at 888-988-JOSH, and we'll give you one of his books free when you schedule and keep your no-obligation review at 888-988-JOSH. 888-988-JOSH. We'll be back after these messages.
Tune in to the financial quarterback Josh Chilinski this weekend and learn how to protect your financial future in a down economy. For a free copy of Josh's book, The Retirement Reality Check, call 888-988-5674 or visit Chilinski.org. That's JALINSKI.org.
Tune in to the financial quarterback Josh Chilinski of the Chilinski Advisory Group this weekend and learn how to protect your financial future during these turbulent times. Looking to lower your taxes or need help securing your financial future? Then Josh and his team are the people for you. They're experts in financial economics with one mission in mind, to protect you and your investments. From their 27-point checklist to their one-of-a-kind financial quarterback approach, they help you achieve financial health and guide you through the hard times of high inflation, looming recessions, and stock market meltdown. For financial security, call them now, 888-988-5674, and get your free copy of Josh's book.
Tell us, how can we protect ourselves in this volatile climate? You mentioned cash is paying good rates, treasuries, CDs, annuities are paying the best rates they've paid in years. There is a golden age of fixed interest investing, you know.
Sure. In stocks, I think that, you know, you want to be in companies that are able to raise their prices. And I think that we want to ultimately also be in assets that are doing real things in the real world. So I'm not a big fan of big tech. I haven't been a fan of big tech. I think the last time we talked, Josh, we were talking about some of the problems with big tech. But I think that a lot of people are feeling the need to get back to things that you know, you can touch, you can put your hands on it, right? And I think that, you know, we see that in the housing, we see that with like people, you know, wanting to invest in their homes, we see it with food and food production, we see it with energy. So I think I favor sectors that are doing real things in the real economy. And I'm shying away from technology and growth stories.
So the old school, you like dividend payers right now, or?
Absolutely. Back. Dividend payers, as long as they got the cash flow to support those dividends. And I like the energy sector a lot. And I'm shying away from big tech, not only because I don't think that they are going to have the level of revenues that they've had in the past and the cash flows, but also because I just think that they've got way too much control, way too much power, and I don't want to give them any more, personally.
No, I hear you. What about property and casualty insurance companies? They did pretty well in the 2022 bust. Do you like them? Because they can generally make money off the float, and higher interest rate environments are better for them?
I mean, I think property and casualty companies and reinsurers have been one of the hidden secrets of the markets for decades. So that's how Buffett is where he is. And I don't think that's going away.
Yeah. And it was a bright spot. You know, some dividend payers did very well last year. Property casualty, energy, some small cap value types,
yeah.
Not other many bright spots other than those, some other sectors.
I mean, I think the big thing is that people need to diversify. And, you know, if you're a professional investor, you have a risk management department, right? but there are tools that professionals use to make sure that they're investing in uncorrelated assets. Ray Dalio, again, famously said,
what does uncorrelated mean for people don't know what it means?
It means that, you know, different things in your portfolio are going up and down at different times, right? So some are zigging while others are zagging, but you're not all in, you know, technology stocks or just energy stocks. So something, you know, the things in each sector tend to move up and down together overall. So when you're diversified, uncorrelated simply means that the assets in your portfolio aren't all going up at the same time and all going down at the same time.
Yeah. And too many, people from 2015 to, I don't know, 2021 were too into FANG man, you know, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, Microsoft, Apple, NVIDIA, Tesla.
Absolutely.
They were like, oh, well, I want to grow my account by 50% a year. And I would try to tell people, hey, you want to have balance. You want to have some precious metals. You want to have some commodities. You want to have some industrials. You want to have some dividend payers. You want to have some growth. You want to have some value. And people were too impatient, but now they're learning when they lost. I mean, think about this.
Yeah, but there's also math that you can use, Josh, yeah. Right? So this isn't rocket science. You know, you have history of these assets. You can see how they move up and down over time. And you can find ones that are, you know, moving up and down at different times, but overall are going up. And if you can do that, it has a wonderful effect that you can actually take less risk. If you are investing in uncorrelated assets, you get this smoother ride up the middle. It's kind of like some of your shots are going to, you know, hook out to the right or hook to the left, and some of them are going to slice to the right. But as you average those together, you're going to have a shot down the middle of the fairway. And so, you know, I've been actually building some of these tools over at my fintech business called Finiac. It's at finiac.com, and we're building tools to help, you know, individual investors build portfolios that are uncorrelated. But, you know this, Josh, you're a pro and you help your clients. And if people aren't investing in a diversified way, you're missing the only free lunch in the markets.
Yeah, and diversification doesn't speak to that. It doesn't just mean you have many different things. People say, "Oh, well, I have 100 different right. stocks," and then when we look at it. It's 100 U.S. stocks. You know,
so right? Absolutely.
Talk about that. You know, asset class diversification. What that means.
So, I mean, interestingly, Bitcoin has been fairly uncorrelated to the stock market for a while. Not so much in the past year, but so Bitcoin together with some equity portfolios did pretty well in terms of diversification. And you also have, of course, bonds, right? They're finally actually moving inversely to stocks. They were moving together with stocks for a long time, but now we're starting to see a bit of the old uncorrelated behavior between stocks and bonds. So that's great. I'm involved in the futures markets myself. So I kind of work with a basket of stock index futures, bonds, energy, oil and natural gas, and precious metals, gold, silver, copper. And even those, you know, 8-10 assets, you can create quite a diversified portfolio that will give you what I call risk compression. Okay. So if you had $1 million just in the stock market, you know, you'd have a certain level of volatility. But if you take $1 million and spread it across half a dozen, 8 uncorrelated investments, you have much less volatility in your portfolio. So I know that's a little complicated and I'm throwing out some math terms there. If this is all over your head, make sure you talk to Josh.
Yeah, it's just if you have 1/8 in one thing, 1/8 in another, 1/8 in another, and it doesn't mean different stocks. It means totally, completely different asset classes. So
yes, you would absolutely
have 1/8
within stocks. Within stocks, yeah. There are things you can do. You know, you can be in some technology and some energy, and you can be in some commodities, some precious metals. You can even be in grains. You can be in utilities. So there are different sectors, and you can do a certain amount of diversification in the stock market itself, but ultimately you want to be have other things besides the stock market in order to get the maximum diversification.
So for example, you know, 1/8 in treasuries, 1/8 in gold or Bitcoin, 1/8 in U.S. stocks, 1/8 in U.S. value, 1/8 in...
1/8 in grains. Grain. You know, I mean, I think we've seen food inflation.
Yeah.
Right? So there's DBA, I think, is the ETF that you can buy that has corn and wheat and soybeans, right?
Yeah, and you can have 1/8 in insurance companies. But that's what I'm trying to get at. Yes. The people just really don't fundamentally get it. Right. Doesn't have to be that hard. And now,
and I think they don't get it because they haven't seen, they don't see it. Nobody shows them the math, you know? It's been really amazing to me, Josh, to really make this kind of the centerpiece of my own personal strategy, to focus not on, you know, each of the investments that I'm in, but how they work together in my portfolio as a whole, and to pay attention to the top line performance of my portfolio, period. You know, so I'm kind of like, you know, all of us are kind of like a bank ourselves, right? We have lots of different assets. And if you let yourself get caught up in the behavior, you know, of each of the individual assets, you start going crazy in your head. When you have a good diversified portfolio, you know, you can just pay attention to the top line and you can make little adjustments now and then, but it gives you such peace of mind because you're not caught up in the wild swings that might be going on in individual assets in your portfolio, right? But you're like, hey, you know, I was expecting that level of volatility in that asset, but I've got this other asset over here that's offsetting that. And as long as those continue to work together well, then, you know, I got nothing to worry about. So I think the markets thrive on all of the chatter and all the inner talking that we do to ourselves about different positions that we're in. And, you know, that's when we get ourselves into trouble.
Yeah, it's like, in a way, I could just say that the Silicon Valley thing is nothing, because the banking industry is the strongest it's ever been. The problem is, does Johnny on the street realize that Silicon Valley Bank is really, and this First Republic, are really bank for super rich people who are in private equity, who then, you know, Cindy was a perfect little guest, mini guest.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, she builds, you know, $20 million mansions for football players in Boston and, you know, famous, you know, like the Tom Brady, those types of elite homes in the Boston area. So she's building $30 million homes. So I think her circle is different than most people who have their Wells Fargo or Chase or, you know, the mainstream banks that got into trouble.
Yep.
They are pristine. The problem is, will you realize, okay, a lot of these private client group people will probably get hurt because they didn't mind the FDIC limits. They had, like you said, hey, what am I going to do? Go to all these banks, you know? And people don't realize there are solutions, you know? Most brokers now will give you, you know, 20 different FDIC numbers, if you ask them. Mm-hmm. You know, you just have to have a brokerage account and, you know how to do it.
I heard a good recommendation today that you should always buy puts on the bank that you have all that you're the most of your money in.
Yeah. Or you mind your, you know, there, you can look up legal reserves, cash reserves of, I'm old school. Yep. I like life insurance companies. Mutual insurance companies, because they have no leverage, pretty much. They have dollar for dollar reserves, and I can have a run on the bank. And, you know, my dividend paying life insurance is making 4-6% as a dividend. Like, I like that. I'm old school. I worry about a depression or, you know, things like that. Not that there will be. But I think a lot of these people got to take a step back. First Republic Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, very different than your bank. But it might be important to mind the FDIC limits. We also don't know, you know, the Dodd-Frank. We haven't had many bank failures after Dodd-Frank. So what's going to happen with the bail-ins and all of those things that people talk about? Will they say, okay, you're too rich? So give us a call, 888-988-JOSH. And somebody want to know the website. This is a live radio show coming to you on YouTube, WOR, iHeartRadio every Saturday and Sunday at 9. We're on YouTube, Clubhouse, Spotify, iHeart. I'm Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback. And get the book Risk Manifesto, by drrichardsmith.com. People asking for the website. It's just drrichardsmith.com. And you get his book when you call us, 888-988-JOSH, The Risk Manifesto. We'll be back talking about, as someone who studies market cycles, what do you think about real estate? You mentioned the one real estate guy, but we have our own cycles analyst at our firm. So he says one thing. I want to hear what you say on real estate. And we'll be talking about investing during volatile times and more. This is Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback with Dr. Richard Smith. Don't touch that dial.
Maybe it seems like prices can't get much higher, or that the stock market is headed for bear territory, or maybe you're worried about another great recession. Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback, can help you protect your family's financial future in times like these. Tune in this weekend to The Financial Quarterback to hear how Josh and his team can help you decrease your tax liability and lower your risk. Call 888-988-5674 to take advantage of Josh's 27-point plan to achieve financial health. And when you call, you'll receive a free copy of Josh's book, Retirement Reality Check. Tune in every weekend to The Financial Quarterback and call 888-988-5674 to receive your free copy of Retirement Reality Check.
This is Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback. We're being joined by Dr. Richard Smith of drrichardsmith.com. Since you know, people are messaging me, what is the website? I've said the website 100 times. drrichardsmith.com. Is that the website you want to plug or the FINIAC?
Yeah, drrichardsmith.com is great. And also for the foundation, it's cycles.org.
And FINIAC is FINIAC.com. And that's backed by 70 years of Nobel Prize winning science, kind of the science of investing. So
it's really modern portfolio theory for everyone else.
That's great. And yeah, well, so let's talk about real estate. When do you think, you know, so sometimes these cycles can expand, contract, you know, it's not an exact, but I did, you can ask Stan myself, I called the absolute low in interest rates. Stan was insistent that the 40-year cycle was supposed to low out in 2021. And I said, Stan, no, it's going to be 2020. Because I said, I do not see a 30-year mortgage going lower than 2.25. And I locked in a 30-year mortgage at 2.25.
Wow.
And because we would have a little debate, is it 2021? Is it 2022? Is it 2020? And I hit it to the day and month.
Oh, my God. Wow.
And locked it in for 30 years.
That's a coup.
I should have taken more out. And I refinanced my commercial debt for a long time. But that's what I think is interesting. I think the real estate crash will be multifamily, commercial, because, but I think it won't be now. I think it'll be 2025. Here's why. I would go, and you'd go to these conventions and people would talk about, so if you had these, you know, big money people on Instagram and all over, so people who might have $1 million to $10 million to invest, they bought commercial in 2020 on low debt that stays low for 5 years. So it's not quite like the ninja loans of 2008, but they were able to get really attractive terms for 5 years, because I was going to do that on my commercial building and I didn't. I opted for the 15-year at, let's say, 4% or something, you know, because it's historically very low. I have a controlled cost. And a lot of people took advantage of, you know, interest-only, 5-year commercial paper. And those mature in, I think, 2025, 2024, 2023. So I guess they start at the tail end of this year. But those will be a wave of banks, you know, everybody buying these.
Interesting.
It was like the thing. Do you remember that? Like, you'd go to conventions, people say, buy apartment complexes, buy.
Right. Yeah, I got solicited on those.
Yeah, I would always get solicited on them. I never did it.
I remember all those solicitations.
Yeah, it was like a thing.
That's interesting. That could be. And I think those are the kinds of things that we have to be looking for, you know, if we want to be. particularly savvy. So got to look for those times when there's a big kind of wave that got locked in at low interest rates that now are going to reset at higher interest rates, right? And that's essentially what happened with Silicon Valley Bank. You know, they locked in a lot of their assets at low interest rates when that was all they could get. And then things have shot up since then, and they had a liquidity crunch.
But who are these people? Meaning, are they just merely rich people? So they'll be okay? I mean,
I think there's a lot of technology startups that are going to be hurting because not clear that they'll make payroll if they can't get their money out of the bank to pay their employees. The big PE companies, Andreessen Horowitz, I saw Peter Thiel saying everybody should get out. So I think some of that West Coast PE VC world is going to feel a little pain from this.
But does that trickle? I don't know. It seems like a PE world. It's not like the 08
I don't
crash
think so.
Because...
But I don't think it bodes that well for tech.
Oh, definitely. Well, I think a lot of the billion, I think the unicorns will blow up, but many of them are private companies now. The ones that are public are pretty solid. I mean, you'll have the fringe companies, but I mean, Amazon lost what, 49% last year? I mean, how much more will it go down? You know,
probably not.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, Google lost 40% last year. That's what I'm... If they start going down more, that's when I'd be like freaking out. But
they do have, they do have headwinds, right? So, the cost, their future revenues aren't worth as much when there's something else people can do with their money.
Sure.
I.e. get paid 5%.
Yeah, people don't realize that the appeal to take money out of the market now is greater because rates are higher.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, simple.
You know, right? You could lock in 10-year paper at nearly, although it lowered today, it was like 3.5. But
yeah, that was a big, big move.
Two-year paper is still pretty nice. But again, there's a lot of good opportunities, folks. Go to finiac.com, FINIAC.com. Go to drrichardsmith.com for more about Dr. Richard Smith's work. And anything else you'd like to plug to our listeners before we conclude this interview, I want to thank you. It was a lot of fun. And parting thoughts from Dr. Richard Smith.
I think that the big thing people need to do is make sure that they're minimizing their maximum regret. So in decision sciences, which is kind of my background, it's called the Minimax Regret. We're in volatile times. We have a lot of uncertainty. Everybody's having a hard time figuring out what's next. It's not just you. So make sure that you're diversified. Make sure you're thinking about the worst case scenario and that that's not going to happen to you. And other than that, don't freak out. I do think we're going to have some price pressures over the next few years, but it's not the end of the world. And the more level-headed we are through this adjustment period, the better we'll come out of it.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Richard Smith. drrichardsmith.com. And call us at 888-988-JOSH. Get your free book when you schedule and keep your no obligation review. Get your portfolio reviewed from a standpoint of data science, of the science of modern portfolio theory. There's so many new innovations that even Dr. Richard Smith has been a part of with how you add different asset classes that are non-correlated. You got to take advantage of that. Give us a call. We can actually model the risk of your portfolio. 888-988-JOSH. 888-988-JOSH.
The preceding program was sponsored by the Jelinski Advisory Group.
Any awards, rankings, or recognition by unaffiliated third parties or publications, including five-star wealth manager, advisory of the year finalist by senior market advisor, and top of the million-dollar roundtable, are in no way indicative of the advisor's future performance or any individual client's investment success. No award, ranking, or recognition should be construed as a current or past endorsement of Josh Jelinski or Wealth Quarterback LLC. Information regarding specific awards, rankings, or recognitions is available on the Wealth Quarterback website at jelinski.org. All investment strategies have the potential for profit or loss. Investment strategies such as asset allocation, diversification, or rebalancing do not assure or guarantee better performance and cannot eliminate the risk of investment losses. There are no guarantees that a portfolio employing these or any other strategy will outperform a portfolio that does not engage in such strategies. This broadcast should not be construed by any client or prospective client as a solicitation to effect or attempt to affect transactions in securities or the rendering of personalized investment advice. Due to various factors, including changing market conditions, the information discussed in this broadcast may no longer be reflective of current positions or recommendations. While information presented is believed to be factual and up to date, Josh Jelinski and Wealth Quarterback do not guarantee its accuracy, and it should not be regarded as a complete analysis of the subjects discussed. The tax and estate planning information discussed is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as legal or tax advice. Listeners should consult an attorney or tax professional regarding their specific legal or tax situation. Investment advisory services offered through Wealth Quarterback LLC.